Many whistleblowers around the world are focused on corruption. They see evidence of waste, fraud, abuse, or illegality, and they go to the authorities. For many corruption whistleblowers, their decision to go to the authorities results in lost friendships and, in some cases, threats to their jobs. But in some extreme cases, the whistleblower pays with his or her life. That's right, sometimes the person engaged in corruption will stop at nothing to silence the truth teller, including resorting to murder. I'm John Kiriakou, and you're watching The Whistleblowers. Today we're discussing the case of Babita Deokaran in South Africa. Babita Deokaran was an official in Johannesburg's Thembisa Hospital. She stumbled across what appeared to be 850 million rand worth of suspicious payments. That's about $47 million. And she went to authorities. As a result, in August 2021, she was targeted by a hit team of six men and ambushed in front of her home. She had told her superior and the police that she feared for her safety, and she asked for police protection, but it wasn't forthcoming. The six killers have been arrested and have been charged with murder, attempted murder, and illegal possession of firearms and ammunition. The alleged mastermind of the plot has not yet been arrested. The six killers should already have gone to trial, but that trial has been delayed several times for legal technicalities. We're joined by renowned Greek South African whistleblower Ari Denikas. Ari is an official with Blueprint for Free Speech, the Australia-based NGO that recently honored the memory of Babita Deokaran and which posthumously awarded her its International Whistleblowing Special Recognition Award. Ari, welcome back to the show. Ari, the story of Babita Deokaran is one that did not get wide coverage in the Western media. In fact, it didn't get any coverage in the West at all. Yet it's a critically important case. Tell us first how this whole thing began. Who was Babita Deokaran? What exactly did she reveal?
John, Babita Deokaran was a government official. She was, in fact, a director for finances for the Department of Health in South Africa. And while she was doing a routine, check on, figures and accounts, she came across certain dodgy transactions, in particular within a hospital. And she flagged nearly 850 million in very dubious payments, on a weekly pay run analysis. And there were a few that came up that they were so suspicious that she actually started investigating further. And she stopped the payment on over 104 million. Rent on payments. When she discovered those, incidents, she actually did what any whistleblower does, they did an internal disclosure, and she went to her CEO and reported her findings. Now, that happened around August 2021. On the 17th of August, she actually sent an email to her CEO with all the information, the details, and she told her that there were, 239 million worth of expenses on a hospital, which was one of the smallest in the area. She discovered that that particular hospital had a rise on expenses 25% more than Charlotte Maxeke Academic Hospital, which is four times the size of this hospital. So the whistleblower reported, everything to the department CFO and called for an immediate investigation. And as I said, she stopped payments worth of 104 million. Now the CEO actually instructed her to proceed with the payments. And Babita didn't accept that. She wrote on the 17th of August an email at 10:42, actually. We actually have the email. And a week later, on the 23rd, she was gunned down at her house entry, inside her car, after she had dropped her daughter to the school.
My God.
This is the story of Babita Del Coran.
What was the immediate reaction to her revelations? Why was it that the authorities didn't seem to take her seriously? Why didn't they launch an immediate investigation?
Look, I believe that a special investigating unit was allocated to, was tasked to investigate that story. She was actually a witness for the National Prosecution Authority in South Africa, and she was going to testify. So she feared for her life, and after speaking to her family, I was told that she had actually sent various emails, you know, saying, look, I'm a bit concerned, and I need protection. That never happened. So we're very concerned about the failure of the system in South Africa that protects witnesses and whistleblowers. At the time, also, if you remember, there was a Sonderkommission, you know, inquiry in place that it was investigating the state capture in South Africa. So there was a lot of talk about whistleblowers. Unfortunately, Babita, the system didn't work for Babita.
No. No, it seems that it didn't. Once that investigation began, she did tell the police that she feared for her safety and she asked for protection. That protection never came. Was she being threatened or was she just worried? And can you explain to us the connection between this taxi industry person that has appeared in the press and the hospital where Babita reported on corruption? This seems to be something of a conspiracy.
I don't think there is a taxi person involved, or maybe that particular person has more than 10 or 20 business, but there are speculations that there is a prominent ANC politician who is actually a, you know, he's a treasurer general of the ANC's Ekurhuleni region, and he owns three companies, Kazen Projects, Nakohoho Medical Supplies, and Bolanoto Security. I mean, he got a 2.8 million contract in 2019, then a 4.2 million in 2020, and in 2021, it shoot up to 7.5 million. So now, if you look at the portfolio of this particular politician, you know, you'll make up your mind, but it's shocking. And it was strange that this person's company sold such a variety of goods to the hospital, including cleaning material, office supplies, and even groceries. Although their one of the companies was listed as an event firm. So here you have an event firm selling medical material to equipment to a hospital. It's crazy. And what Babita and discovered was, to give an idea, four plastic waste rubbish bins were sold for 15,000 rand. in dollars, that's probably about what, 2,000-3,000 euro, right? Dollars. It's ridiculous.
We've seen in the South African press, Ari, that the trial of the six alleged killers has been repeatedly delayed. The most recent excuse coming from the South African police is that they haven't received all of the forensic test results back yet. But this murder happened more than a year ago. Why are there these repeated delays?
There are two possibilities here. One is, okay, right now, the judiciary in South Africa is chaotic. It's pre-election, you know, times. The current government is extremely corrupted. So, you know, they really don't want the dirty laundry to come out. So they delaying justice, okay? Mm-hmm. And the second issue is that the forensic department in South Africa at the moment, it's underworking, they're underemployed. So there are many, actually there are thousands of criminal cases pending due to forensic reports. What puzzles me is that President Ramaphosa, you know, spoke about Babita, and he, you know, he was adamant that whistleblowers need to be protected, and you know, there has to be some safety mechanisms, and whistleblowers are so important for South Africa. So if I was a president, you know, I'll put some buttons and try to get results. So I've got a problem with that. I think the problem is political, and they just don't want this case to be untangled.
Thanks, Ari. Stay with us because we're going to take a short break and we'll come right back with you.
Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
Why is the West so determined to continue its Ukraine proxy war against Russia? How does such a position benefit Ukraine? Instead of considering possible peace agreements, the West, led by Washington, seems to see war as the only option. Why can't there be security for all?
Cuarto secuestro, ya me invitaron a mí a bajarme yo. O sea, yo secuestrarlo por primera vez.
A hairdresser, a bus driver, a salesperson. Anyone could become a victim. That's how private negotiators first appeared.
Tengo que enfrentar, asistir a un primo hermano, porque secuestraron a su cuñada en la...
A ver, hermano, vamos a ubicarlo. Mira, no te voy a faltar al respeto, porque no gano nada con lanzarte la mano ni tratarte mal.
Y hasta septiembre del mismo año volví a pagar otra vez. Me mandaron los lóbulos de la niña.
Es muy difícil convencer a un familiar que diga que está dispuesto a correr ese riesgo.
México, por desgracia, desde hace más de 15 años, tiene el primer lugar de secuestros en el mundo, de secuestros económicos.
Welcome back to The Whistleblowers. I'm John Kiriakou. We're speaking with Greek South African whistleblower Ari Denikas about the case of South African whistleblower Babita Deokaran, who blew the lid off of a $47 million corruption scandal at a Johannesburg hospital and was murdered for her revelations. Ari Denikas is a well-known South African whistleblower in his own right. He blew the whistle on police death squads that were using apartheid-era interrogation methods on black suspects, including torture and extrajudicial killings on people suspected of minor crimes like auto theft. Ari was more fortunate than Babita was. He and his wife escaped South Africa with their lives. Welcome back, Ari. This reminds me, to tell you the truth, a little bit about your own case with the South African police and your own whistleblowing. I can see a pattern connecting your case and Babita's. At the time that you and your wife were fleeing South Africa, you said that your lives were in danger. The South African police mocked you, and they urged you repeatedly to return. Well, Babita also said that her life was in danger. The police pretended that everything was fine, and now she's dead. Tell us about your own experience here. Why were you so certain that you were in danger? What was it that made you decide to leave South Africa quickly?
Tony, my case, going back to 2004, when I was a volunteer peace officer for the South African Police Service, I served with the notorious Ketomane unit, and I started watching atrocities committed by my colleagues. I watched torture at the offices. I watched, extrajudicial killings. The unit was collecting a lot of trophy photos of dead African suspects. And as I gained experience, I realized that there's a repeated pattern on violations of human rights. Now, what I did was in 2004, I secretly filmed three short videos with one of my smartphones that had a camera inside. So I took three videos of actually a torture of an African suspect, the offices. So I did what Babita de Coran did. Mm-hmm. I decided to do an internal public disclosure. That's all I knew of. So I went to my senior commanding officer, who was also a supposed friend at the time, and I produced the evidence. And I said to him, look, there's a problem here. Those guys are the racists. They're going around, violating human rights. And they also, they don't follow the constitution of South Africa. So instead of dealing with it and investigating, the, chief policeman or commanding officer of the unit, he actually laughed about it. He said, well, that's how my boys get results. Get rid of it. Don't speak to anybody. So that was the very first issue I had when I actually reported wrongdoing. After that, I started suffering retaliation. I wasn't allowed to go to the office. I was searched. My cell phone was collected and put into a bucket. And for the next 4 years that I remained in the force, I've witnessed further atrocities, which I also documented. Eventually, I went public with them, and the very next day, a bunch of policemen came to my home, and they tried to intimidate me. Mm. They tried to give me a verbal suspension. They threatened me. My house had been burglared at the same time of the month. My shop had been shot at, drive-by shooting. I was beaten up in my store, attacked. So there were many incidents, and I knew I had experience after 10 years in the police force to see the modus operandi and what will happen to me. And I end up, taking my wife, leave everything behind me, and virtually I was smuggled out of the country mm-hmm. by a friend.
Mm-hmm. It was the only way to protect your safety.
Unfortunately, I was lucky. Fortunately, I was lucky. I had a dual citizenship, mm-hmm. I had double passports, and I could leave the country. Yes. But Babita de Coran didn't have this option.
There was an investigation into the allegations that you and others in South Africa made, and you even went to the South African embassy in Athens to make a formal statement. What ended up happening in your case? You were able to provide authorities with this actual video that you took. And I've seen it myself. These illegal police interrogations led to the deaths of people. The videos were very graphic. Was anybody ever brought to justice?
John, after I went to an exile, I tried to rebuild my life.
Yes.
From scratch. I've lost everything. So, I wanted to put everything behind me, but I didn't. Because I thought to myself that I gotta do something about it. I cannot leave all those Africans
right
behind me, all those dead, tortured, the families. It's all about closure. It's all about accountability. So I sent various emails to various, networks, media networks, government organizations. Nothing happened. So then I took everything and I loaded it on YouTube, on a channel, and I said, I had enough. I've done enough. I will move on with my life. Then in 2011, an activist contacted me through my YouTube channel at the time and told me, are you aware that there is a criminal investigation on the Katomane unit? So I said, no, I'm not. Gee, that's interesting. And then that activist suggested that he get me into contact with the authorities in South Africa. And I jumped on the idea. I said, oh, wow, that's God's will, So after that, I start talking to the National Prosecution Authority and the police detectives of South Africa, and they visit me three times in South Africa. From 2012 to 2016, I put my life into hold, and I cooperated. I gave them my evidence. I've tried to explain them the situation. However, they were very dodgy, they were very corrupted and incompetent. They tried everything to get me to fly me back in South Africa, and I knew I could not go back to South Africa because, A, there's so much corruption within the unit. I mean, I know the guys, I knew how they operated, but my life was in danger. I mean, I had a newborn at the time. I was a father for the first time in my life. And I said to myself, no, I will actually, you need to guarantee me protection. You need to put me in a witness protection, program. You need to secure that me and my family are protected, my identity is covered, and only then I will testify from another place outside of South Africa. We agreed to that, and then they never gave me the protection. They came back. They asked me again to go back to South Africa. I refused. And what they did there was very interesting. It's actually sad what they did. They took my notes, my draft notes, you know, the ones we talk about and we write down. Sure. They went back to court without my knowledge and my approval. They lied in court and they produced my draft notes as a sworn affidavit. They faked my signature.
My goodness.
I found this from the newspaper, and eventually they put in jeopardy the case. The case was destroyed. Then they flew back to South Africa, to Greece, and they asked me again to help them with a mutual legal agreement. And again, I said, guys, I'll help you, but you need to apologize to me first, and you need to give me some sort of, witness protection. They lied to me again. And as I signed the mutual legal agreement statement, they left me with no protection. And from 2016 to 2019, where I find out that the case had been dropped, and I find out by the media. That was the story.
By the media. Getting back to Babita's case, I know that you've been in touch with her family. I know that her daughter has spoken to the South African media. What are they saying? How are they preparing for what eventually will be a very difficult trial?
I've spoken to Tony, who is a pastor and the brother-in-law of the late Babita, and asked him a few questions because I wanted to hear it from the family. And they told me that the devastated. They told me that they had no feedback from the investigating authorities. They told me that they are suspecting that the politicians through the inside the ANC are, you know, involved, and they're delaying the procedure. And they also told me that they don't have much faith on the system. That is sad. They're frustrated. I mean, a year gone by, and there's one postponement after the other. So they are extremely frustrated and hurt. The system has let them down.
The system has let them down. What do these cases say about the system in South Africa, about the law enforcement and judicial systems? At Blueprint for Free Speech, the NGO where you follow these issues quickly, they have opinions certainly on the South African system. Are things moving in the right direction, or are they regressing in South Africa?
Well, my slogan is, South Africa, stop killing your whistleblowers. So I'm saying this for a reason.
Wow.
You know, there's currently so much corruption at the political level in South Africa that there's no chance things will get better. The judiciary, the police, the courts are controlled by a corrupted political party that is acting like a mafia family. They are weaponized, the security forces, and especially the police force, in order to silence whistleblowers. I mean, I'm handling a lot of whistleblowers from South Africa, and I advocate for them. And they come to me in order to support them. And the details of corruption within the government and authority are shocking. With elections close by, the current politicians are all for themselves and for the takings. In the meantime, the South Africans, especially the underprivileged Africans, are living in poverty. The crime rates are out of control. Infrastructure is not existing, and the wealth as well as prime land is still unequal distributed in South Africa. I'm afraid that it will get catastrophically worse before it gets better.
Greek South African whistleblower Ari Dinikas, thank you so much for joining us. Before we go, I'd like to urge our viewers to take a look at Ari Danikas' website. Go to catomanordeathsquad.com. That's catomanordeathsquad.com for the full story. We'd like to thank Ari Danikas for joining us, and thank you, our viewer, for joining us. I'm John Kiriakou, and this has been The Whistleblowers. We'll see you next time.